Welcome to this edition of Environment Matters with me, Amanda Yorworth. Environment Matters is the show that brings you news on issues of sustainability and the environment from around St Albans and from further afield. Now, this week we heard that in the UK, the amount of rubbish that we incinerate is set to overtake the amount that we recycle for the first time. Here in St Albans, the subject of incineration has not been at the forefront of our minds since the planning inspector chose not to allow the building of a waste incinerator down the road at New Barnfield in Hatfield. But for people living in Hoddesdon, where the Secretary of State, Sajid Javid, has called in the decision to give planning permission to Veolia for an energy from waste facility in Rye Mead, the issue is very much alive. And closer to home, Emsrain Renewable Energy are planning to submit a proposal to Central Bedfordshire Council to build an energy from waste plant on Greenbelt land at Newmill End between Harpenden and Luton on land owned by the Lutonhoo Estate. They say the facility will generate up to 49 megawatts of power, create 400 jobs for the 3 years of its construction and 40 full-time jobs thereafter. It will burn 500,000 tonnes of waste each year. I spoke to Nigel Cronin, a consultant representing Chiltern Green Energy. Nigel, thank you very much indeed for joining me. So can we just start by, could you give us an idea about the size of the proposed facility? How big is it? How tall is it? And you know, how many football fields perhaps?
Okay, well, the actual size of the site itself, that's in its entirety, is around 9 hectares. The facility, the plant itself, takes up around, just looking at a quick drawing, around two-thirds of that site. And the stack at this moment in time is estimated to be somewhere around the 80-metre mark, but obviously that's due, that is designed relative to the technical assessments that we're undertaking at the present time.
Okay, so the stack is the chimney, and the height of that is determined by how high you need to get those emissions. And it's in,
yes,
a bit of, it's in a bit of a valley, isn't it? So that might be a bit of a problem.
Well, I think there's been definitely comments around the idea that this site is located within a valley, but we're really talking about rolling countryside rather than the sort of valleys that we might consider that you would see in areas of a very different landscape in the Yorkshire Dales, for instance.
Yeah, okay. But this is, as you said, we've still got a high stack and it's quite big. That's about 6 hectares, and it is close to Lutonhoo. This is, you know, an attractive place, and it is on Greenbelt as well.
Yeah, the project isn't ignoring the fact that the important designation of Greenbelt exists on the site, but the overriding argument for the location is the fact that if you're going to develop renewable energy and maximise the resource in the form of electricity and heat and power, then you need to be quite close to the off-taker, which in this case would be London Luton Airport. And the difficulty about distance is heat and steam starts to dissipate over distance.
Right. OK, then. So, as you said, you're hoping to recover energy from waste. What kind of waste are we talking about here?
We're talking about material called refuse-derived fuel, or RDF. And that material is generated principally from commercial industrial sources, although it can be generated from household waste, but we're not anticipating that in the short term. And so it's had all of the recyclable element taken out, and it's the material that's left over there that is then refined because it has a calorific value that's okay, appropriate for the plant.
So, Nigel, what kind of thing are we talking about then that's not recyclable but is burnable?
Well, the reality is, and I'm sure that you and I and your listeners will appreciate that, irrespective of how hard we try, that when you have a look at the residual waste that ends up in your black bin, as is my case in Canterbury, there is still an element of material in there that will burn, but it's not the headline, white paper, newspaper and cardboard, because clearly those materials can be diverted towards recycling. Yeah. But irrespective of how much effort you put in, generally in the UK, we are achieving around 40 to 50% recycling, and that appears to be quite a challenge to go beyond that point. So we're comfortable about the fact that that material is still available.
Okay, well, I mean, we have got to close to 60 here in St Albans, so there's certainly improvements to be made there. And the kind of thing that tends to be residual is plastic, isn't it? Certainly in my bin, that's the kind of thing.
Yeah, it is, and clearly plastic is a topic of high debate at the moment. So there will always be an element of plastic within
indeed.
Residual waste.
I was going to say, plastics are basically made from crude oil, aren't they? So it's really just like burning fossil fuels. You're saying this is sustainable. In what way is this sustainable?
Well, the simple fact is that we're talking about a material that's been discarded by the creator of waste. That's you and I. And so recovering energy from that material, which has otherwise been discarded, is really an accepted form of renewable energy and is actively pursued in most of the developed mainland European countries and across the world.
Yes, but that doesn't necessarily make it sustainable, which is what it says on your website, does it? It really is an unsustainable practice, is single-use things that are discarded and then burnt.
Well, that's right. And, I don't think Chiltern Green Energy project is intended or in any way that it will resolve the present issue with plastics. But there's one thing absolutely certain, that moving the recovery of those materials so we recover renewable energy is a far stronger case than actually disposing of it to landfill, because once it reaches landfill, then you are much more likely to have a negative impact on the natural environment.
Well, but plastic is an inert substance that will just sit there as a carbon sink in, surely, in landfill.
Well, that really depends on whether your view is that you just allow material to be deposited in the ground and leave it there forever, or you take what I think is a more proactive view and recover energy in the short term.
Okay, so let's turn to another matter there. Let's turn to emissions. Now, there was a report produced for Zero Waste Europe that found that, and I'll just quote, they say the release of pollutants to air, soil and water is an unavoidable consequence of waste incineration, despite the adoption of pollution abatement measures. Now, of course, you're going to have to conform to all sorts of regulations, but it's saying that even with these abatement measures, local people, and in particular children at nearby schools and things, they're going to be exposed to damaging emissions, things like particulates, heavy metals, poisonous gases. Now, that's really not acceptable, is it?
Well, I think that the point that we're all in, the position that we're all in, is the fact that we have the Environment Agency as the UK regulator for these type of facilities. There are over 40 operating plants currently in the UK. All of those operate under strict environmental permits, which have emission limits attached to them. So the view very clearly is that the Environment Agency is the keyholder to our air quality and security, and so this application would need to satisfy the Environment Agency in that regard.
Right, but you can't, basically you're saying, well, it might well be that it affects local people, but if the Environment Agency allows it, well, you know, that's fine then.
No, that isn't what I was saying at all. What I was saying is that it's the Environment Agency who seeks to determine whether a development would have a negative impact on human health or the natural environment, and that's the regulatory regime in which we operate.
Right.
So the view would be that if the Environment Agency, who will be a statutory consultee on this application, deem that it is acceptable at that location, and using the technical assessments that have been agreed and are currently being carried out, then the simple fact is that the Environment Agency are there to determine whether that's appropriate or not. And I absolutely don't see that the Environment Agency would consent anything that they think would have a detrimental impact to either human health or the natural environment.
Okay. Okay, Nigel. So the waste that's going to be feeding this plant, where is it going to come from geographically?
Well, we have a number of in-principle supply agreements at the moment. Because this facility is located very close to a junction of the M1 motorway, which obviously is a strategic network, then the material will be generated from waste transfer stations along the line of the M1, but we also have an in-principle agreement from a supplier that will develop around 25% of our total income, our total inputs, from around 15 miles away, 15 miles of the plant.
So. Yeah. I mean, you indicate on the website that that waste will just be arriving via the M1, but, you know, the M1 is I don't know if you know, so you live a little way away, the M1 there is regularly at a standstill. And so you can just imagine that actually, you know, on these lorries, the sat-nav is going to be sending them all around the houses, aren't they? So there's going to be an immense impact on local roads. I think you've estimated two lorries an hour arriving.
Well, I think that the position that we're in at the moment is that we've had a number of discussions with the Highways Authority in terms of scoping out the technical assessments that they wish us to carry out as part of the application. Now, I used to live in Rugby, so irrespective of the fact that I may be somewhat distanced to the M1, I know it very well indeed. But the simple fact is that when you make an application to a planning authority, the Highways Agency are the statutory consultee. They will determine whether they believe that the road network and the junction is suitable. Thereafter, the intention is that we would have a routing agreement that would ensure that the vehicles will only arrive at the site from the M1 junction, so that's from the northerly direction.
Right.
And the intention is to design the access in order that we prevent vehicles either arriving from the south or actually leaving the site and travelling southward. So we are convinced that we can control vehicles between the facility and the M1 junction.
Okay. Nigel, just one more thing. This planning application seems to have come as a bit of a surprise to locals. Do you have any events, plans to engage with local people about it?
We have agreed a stakeholder engagement plan as part of the application and the early discussions with the planning authority, and we've held an initial consultation day in East Hyde, which is the closest community to the facility. The intention of that consultation is that we understand and hear the concerns that local people have around the scheme, and we are also planning further meetings with planning with parish councils that are in close proximity to the project, and the consultation is part of a program. So we've had the first one. You know, we've noted the concerns, and as we're developing the technical assessments, we will attempt to mitigate those concerns.
Lovely. Nigel Cronin, thank you very much indeed. Now, Tim Armstrong-Taylor of Stop Harpenden Luton Incineration was listening to what Nigel Cronin had to say, and I spoke to him. So, Tim, we don't really have any choice, do we? We've got this residual waste, lots of it's plastic, and we have to do something with it. And it looks like incineration is the best option.
Well, incineration isn't the best option. And in fact, it's a very poor option. The thing about incineration is that not only are you releasing a ton of CO2 for every ton of waste burnt into the atmosphere, but you're actually destroying finite resources. And it depresses recycling. So all the money that's going into incineration is being diverted away from recycling. In fact, recently, Professor Ian Boyd, who's chief scientific advisor at DEFRA, has said if there's one way of quickly extinguishing the value of a material, it's to stick it in an incinerator and burn it. He said, one thing that worries me is that we're taking these materials and we're putting them in incinerators and we are losing them forever and we are creating carbon dioxide out of them. I think that incineration is not a good direction to go in. There is a solution for this plastic, and it's not to burn it. It's to bury it in the ground at the moment and then wait until such time as we are able to deal with it. We have the technology to deal with it.
OK. But if we were going to incinerate it, then a site like this, relatively sparsely populated, is a good option. It's about as good as we can do.
No, it's a terrible option. This site, according to the World Health Organization, you should never put an incinerator in a valley, near food crops, near to residential houses, and near to a watercourse. This is fits all four of those criteria, basically.
OK, well, you've been quite decisive on that one then. But apart from that, it is close to the M1, and that is helpful, isn't it, with all the lorries coming backwards and forwards?
It would be if one could guarantee that the traffic could get through there. And actually, it's not two lorries an hour. It's actually a lorry every 2.5 minutes.
Oh, that was my mistake. I apologise for that.
So we're looking at an immense amount of traffic, 300 HGVs a day. That road, I don't know if you know it, but that road is very windy. It's an accident, traffic accident black spot as well. There's going to be an immense amount of disruption during construction and also during the running of the plant. And actually, on an interview on BBC Radio, Three Counties Radio, Malcolm Evans of Emsrain quite rightly said the last thing the operator of the plant would want is to have his fuel supply caught up in a traffic jam. So there's no guarantee that those lorries aren't going to come from every which way.
OK. But one thing you hopefully do feel a little bit more at ease about is the emissions, because they are closely regulated by the Environment Agency. So at least you can breathe easily, as we say, for that one.
Well, you can't breathe easily because actually what there was a new report launched on waste incineration in the House of Lords. And it argues that incinerators exceed pollution reporting thresholds, but the public have not been told. It reveals that emissions for particulate matter and NOx, it reveals all those emissions on a chart, basically, and showing where we are now. And it shows that incineration pollution costs billions.
OK, so it's quite nasty stuff then, according to that.
And yeah, well, we're looking at this particulate matter, and these dioxins. And for people that don't know, I mean, dioxins are linked with many cancers and neurological damage.
OK, so really quite nasty. So Tim, you've made a good case there. Perhaps listeners might agree with you. What should they do if they agree and wish to oppose this incinerator?
Well, right now we're trying to raise awareness and we've done pretty well so far. But what we'd like people to do is to log on to our website, which is shli.org.uk, and to register with us. We'll keep them informed. They need to write to their MP. And then when the planning permission is submitted, we would ask that people object. And we will be there to feed everyone with information all the way along.
Tim, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
I'll pop a blog on the Radio Verulam website, www.radioverulam.com, with links so you can find out more. I'll be back at the same time next week. Until then, thank you for listening.